Lecture 35, The Inca and Their Predecessors.
In the previous lecture, we ended with the collapse of the Moche civilization around AD 700, the result in considerable part, we suspect, of natural disasters like earthquakes and El Niños. Now, in Lecture 35, we're going to continue our exploration of Andean civilization by moving to the highlands and charting the later course of Andean civilization. We begin at the southern pole of Andean civilization, in the highlands, near Lake Titicaca, where the Tiwanaku state came into prominence among earlier smaller kingdoms in the late 1st millennium AD. As Moche faded into obscurity, so Tiwanaku became important. This civilization, with its pervasive religious beliefs, collapses in about AD 1000. And then we go back to the coast, to the north coast, and examine the flamboyant state of Chimor, which is described in the second part of this lecture. Now, the Chimu were expert irrigation farmers and metalworks in the tradition of the Moche. And ultimately, they were conquered by the all-conquering Inca, whose rise to imperial conquerors and whose huge empire, Tahuantinsuyo, forms the latter part of this lecture. We're going to describe the organization of the empire and the Inca passion for organization, also the institutions that fueled endless Inca conquests. And finally, we'll take a look at the weaknesses in this great empire, which collapsed in the face of a small party of Spanish adventurers in AD 1532. You'll recall in the last lecture, we talked about an important cult and pilgrimage center, Chavín-de-Huanta, in the Andean foothills. And as Chavín rose to prominence in the northern foothills, in the first millennium BC, small kingdoms appeared for the first time around Lake Titicaca to form the beginnings of what is known as the southern pole of Andean civilization. These states appeared at a time when more intensive alpaca and llama herding and potato agriculture began to transform the Altiplano landscape. By 1200 BC, before even Chavín came into prominence, these polities had developed widespread trading connections, which even extended as far north as the north coast. You are dealing, you see again, with this interdependency for different products between highlands and lowlands, which, like in other parts of the world, transcended temporary political developments. There always was this need for products from both each areas. And at the same time as they were trading with the north coast, the people around Lake Titicaca were beginning to develop woven textiles and irrigation agricultural techniques which spread to the southern coast of what is now Peru. And one of the catalysts for this trade was, of course, the domestication of the llama. But the llama has serious limitations as a beast of burden because it can only carry about 35 pounds. But nevertheless, small caravans of these moved constantly between highlands and lowlands, carrying such products as fish meal and so on. This interconnectedness increased. By AD 450, after the time of Christ, Tiwanaku, a center at the southern end of Lake Titicaca, was becoming a major population center, as well as an economic and religious focal point for the entire region. Much of its prosperity came from the trade around the southern shores of the lake. At the same time, it also became a major religious center, with a great sunken court and large earthen platform known as the Acapana. During heavy rain, water would gush out of this sunken court at the summit of the platform and fill a large moat surrounding the ceremonial precincts.